And welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
And we're both in SoCal again. We are SoCal boys.
Yes.
If you want a spoiler-free review, we're talking about Wicked for Good today. Our spoiler-free edition, the first thoughts edition of our thoughts are... You can find that over on our channel. This is the spoiler review. This is our full in-depth thoughts. We're getting into it. So if you haven't seen Wicked for Good, this might not be the one that you want to watch. We've got another one that you can go watch that before you see it, and then come back and watch this after you see it and see how it all lines up. Okay. So we're back after a year-long intermission.
Yeah. A year too long of an intermission.
Here's the thing about these movies is there's a lot, like, the question is, like, should they have just made it all one film? And I think that you and I agreed after seeing the first one, it makes sense why they wanted to break it up, because of the way it's structured, it's hard to imagine the movie going on for an additional 45 minutes to an hour after Defying Gravity. It's such a, like, incredible finale to the first film. It ends and you're like, good, let's end it right there, and we'll come back, you know, later on.
It's just that
the second act of Wicked has always been the weaker of the two acts.
And
everyone was curious to see, like, are they going to use the additional time that they have now? It's not like they only have 45 minutes to wrap up the story. They've now got as much time as they think they need, which apparently is 2 hours and 17 minutes. And I just feel like this movie doesn't really add anything to the story other than time.
I think that they were too faithful to the second act of the play. Like, I love that they were faithful to the first act of the play, because it was great, just like we talked about. But, you know, man, I really do wonder if you make a 3-hour movie with an intermission. I mean, that, you know, that seems to be accepted in some areas, you know, like, and because it's like you come away, I feel like, I felt like we were plopped into the middle of a story and I had no bearings on, like, I know where it was going, but it, this movie does not stand on its own. It doesn't, it, you can't, and I wish they would have made it more, like, I wish they would have changed this section of the play and made it way more of its own movie, that it could stand on its own 2 feet and just be a standalone movie as a little bit more as a sequel. And I wish they would have introduced more of the Wizard of Oz, right? Like, the movie with Dorothy and all of them. I wish they could have had more scenes of that to kind of show a little bit different perspective. And I wish it was only an hour and a half or an hour and 45 minutes, just to kind of make it fun, quick, and exciting, and kind of get in and out and make it more of a twist ending. Because, I mean, this is a twist ending. They think that she dies. That's the whole point, is that she melts, right, in the movie. In the Wizard of Oz, and it was all kind of a ruse, and Fierro seemed to be in on it because Fierro is Scarecrow. So,
but there's also, like, a much bigger twist, I think, which is, like, and I don't know if you feel this, but it feels like this movie, and also just this kind of stage musical, this adaptation, maybe it's the book, has, like, a weird animosity for the original film. Like, it feels like the twist is, like, the original film that you watched is actually not the story at all, and it was told, like, by an, like, an unreliable narrator, and actually everyone hates Dorothy, like, she sucks, and like, the whole team, that, like, they all suck. Tin Man, like, the lion, they're all terrible. And I'm just kind of like, I'm like, okay, I get that, like, we want to say the witch isn't as bad as you thought she was. She's got motivations that made her the way she is that are actually, if you know the full story, like, I think there's a difference between saying you don't know the whole story and knowing the whole story will give you new context versus you are actually told the wrong story. And I feel like the puzzle pieces, this is always how the second act of this has felt to me and how this movie feels. It's like, the puzzle pieces don't really fit with the original 1940s film.
No, they don't.
They don't. Nothing really lines up, especially, Fierro being the Scarecrow. I've always had a problem with, like, everyone's motivations. I'm just kind of like, okay, so the lion hates her because she let him out of a cage when he was a cub.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no one's going to step in and be like, lion, that's not rude what she did. Like, that's that was nice. She did you a, like, I know that you, like, are mad at her, but, like, she actually helped you, you know? Then the Tin Man hates her because she turned him into tin, but he was in the room when Nessa Rose made a wish to make his heart evaporate, like,
disappear.
Elphaba did everything she could to save his life, and he watched it all happen, and he's like, I hate Elphaba. And it just doesn't seem to me. And then Scarecrow is the one where I'm like, why is Fiero even with the team? Like,
that's why I think it would have been way more fun to include more of the Wizard of Oz, so that you could kind of see, like, oh, all of this is happening. And then in the end, it's a twist, and like, oh, Scarecrow is Fiero. Like, you recontextualize all the stuff that you saw and realize that Fiero and Elphaba were pulling the strings the whole time. Right. Like, that's what would make it way more of a fun, like, oh, because, like, when I knew that I've seen the play. So I knew that Fiero was a Scarecrow. I knew everything. So, and I think a lot of people know the ending, which is totally fine. That's why, like, you can kind of, like, the first act is like, oh, you get to see the play in a real way. So we're going to stay true to it. The second act is not nearly as fun. So we're going to add some fun to it. I think if they would have totally made this a different, if they would have done that, where we see this, like, oh, wow, this is all different. You could still have this big twist ending with Fiero being the Scarecrow. And it would work because, like, even when I saw him in the movie, I'm like, that doesn't look like Fiero. I would have never guessed that that was Fiero if I didn't know that that was him.
Well, and take us on a new journey. The audience has known this show, like, for as long as we have, like, offer us something new. And of course, there is new stuff here because it's much longer. So there's more. Yeah. But like I said at the beginning, all I feel like they really added is time. There's a few new songs, and the new songs, like, don't do what you want a new song to do, which is, like, if you're going to add a new song, hopefully it's giving me more context to, because the thing about this, the second act in the stage show is we kind of speed run through all of the second and third acts of the character arcs for all these characters. We move so fast through it that the audience almost doesn't mind, because it's sort of like, you just sort of accept it. You're like, oh, okay, Bach turns into the Tin Man, and the cub that she released in the first act is now the lion. Fiero is the Scarecrow. I see it all. Okay, cool. And it moves so quickly, you don't really have time to think about how it doesn't quite make sense or line up with. And they're just sort of having fun with, like, making fun of Dorothy and stuff. But when we have 2 hours and 15 minutes to really, like, sit in the, and all we're doing is just making the second act longer.
Yeah.
You're sitting there watching it going, like, okay, but I don't get why anyone's doing what they're doing. I always was like, why did Nessa Rose become a tyrant in Munchkin Land? Yeah. And we have more time to explore that. And what, like, I've always sort of had an issue with, like, why does Bach just become so homicidally angry at Elphaba? Even though, like, especially in the movie, we see, like, he was there for the events. He should be aware that it's not really Elphaba's fault. And but the fact that Ness is like, it was Elphaba, it's like, you were there, dude. You saw it. So, like, the movie, it's like, don't have him be like, figure out a way to make that lie plausible. And then again, it's like, or since you have more time, like you said, let's spend some more time getting into the Dorothy of it all, and let these characters, just their motivations, make a little bit more sense. Let's see how Fiero has some kind of, you know, 3D chess end game that he's working out with Elphaba.
Yeah.
Because even, like, the end of this movie, Elphaba has a narration that says something like, I wish Glinda could know, but she can't. And it's like, why? Like, you're just watching the movie, you're like, why can't she?
She lied through all of this, pretending that you were a bad person. she could just continue to do it knowing that you're still alive.
I just don't understand why she can't know that her friends are alive and happy. Why can't she? The movie, and that's basically this screenplay for me. I will say again, my subtitle for the film is good enough, because Stephen Schwartz's music is still strong here.
Yes.
Our lead performances are just as strong as they were in the first film. They're not falling off, Cynthia and Ariana are bringing it.
Amazing.
Cynthia brings the house down with no good deed, goes unpunished.
Amazing.
Like, I literally clapped. Like, it ended I was like,
I was blown away by that song for sure. Yeah. And her, she jumps and she's flying, and like the production is, it's amazing.
It's awesome. The production design is just as good as it was in the first film. Obviously, amazing. Why wouldn't it be? They shot these at the same time. Ariana and Cynthia are going to get you a little misty eyed with For Good. Yes. They're just going to get
you. Absolutely. Yeah.
They're going to get you. And it's good enough. I would just say the problem with the film is the screenplay by Winnie Holtzman and Dana Fox. Winnie Holtzman, who wrote the book for the musical and then had a collaborator for the screenplay. But I don't know if I can put it squarely on Winnie Holtzman, because I know that when you're writing the script for a musical, you're in collaboration with like for a musical, the person who's really running the show is the composer. So Stephen Schwartz it's like his show.
Right.
He's telling the book writer what gaps she needs to fill in between songs, but he's kind of the head writer. He's like the boss writer, and she's got to write a script that complements that sets up his songs. But the songs are like the main event. And I think that Winnie Holtzman's script for the stage show works just fine. I think that this screenplay, it's like, you had an opportunity here to bring in more elements from the book and flesh out some of these character arcs and character motivations. And you just didn't.
It really was. And like I said before, we feel like we're plopped into the middle of a story, which we are, because in the play, you come back, you've already seen it. Like you are in the middle of a story and you're figuring out the end, but you've got to reestablish everything. Like for this movie to work, you've got to and I wish they kind of showed the passing of time a little bit more.
Exactly. I also didn't know how much time had passed.
Yes.
And it seemed like a lot, weirdly. Like everyone's in our
first movie, but not that much.
Right. Like in the first movie, they're all in school. And in the second movie, they're all like adults in the real world with adult jobs.
Yeah.
Like Nessa's the mayor or something of Munchkin Land. And Bach works for her. And Galinda is obviously she's the good witch of Oz, and she's sort of this kind of pawn in the hands of the wizard and Madame Morrible. But everything, when the movie starts, we're right into Thank Goodness and Galinda sort of meeting with the citizens of Oz and Munchkin Land, and everyone. I'm kind of sitting there going how much older is everyone? Is this 5 years later? Is it, Elphaba's sort of disappeared since the end of the first movie and nobody knows where she is. And I just feel like in general in this film, just like the end when it's like, she can't know. And you ask why, and the answer is because that's what the script says. I feel so many things in this film, it's like, why is that person doing that? It's like, because that's what they need to do in order for this to sort of fit into the beginning of The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And it's okay, cool. But outside of that, why are they doing it?
I mean, it almost would have been better if you had kind of a stylized montage of kind of what happened, maybe not the whole movie, the whole first movie, but kind of at the last little bit. Right. And then have something that says 3 years later, 4 years, however long it has been, it probably should be a few years.
Yeah.
Because I think the relationship between Glinda and Elphaba was so strong in the first one, it was very disorienting to see that they were kind of at odds with each other. And I feel like if you were to have a longer period of time and have a little bit more time with them in the beginning to, again, kind of reestablish where they're at, reestablish their normal world to set us back into a first act, right? If for a movie, you want it to have three acts and you want to set up like this is the normal world where they're kind of both questioning. Maybe they haven't talked in a few years, right? So like they don't really know how they feel about each other. Like if you were to establish that in the beginning, I would have felt way more comfortable with them, like kind of not knowing where they're at with each other. Cause it just kind of felt like you guys loved each other. Like this doesn't feel like it's been
right
a long enough time. So I want that time for the distance between them to be there. Cause maybe they're, you know, like have something where they're just, they finally meet up and like, you know, are you still on my side? Are you not? Something to exactly kind of give us that.
And rather than Winnie Holtzman and Dana Fox, like using the extra time in the screenplay to tell us something about that, about like what happened in between films that maybe like widened the divide between our two main characters, because they end on pretty good terms at the end of, at the end of the first film. So what happened in the interim, rather than using that time, they just sort of are like, you know, the story now they're like, Glinda's and it just sort of, it's like, it is this way because it is. And early on in this film, Fierro is now, he's like the leader of the ASEAN military or something.
Yeah.
He's like the guard for the Emerald City. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. Like, I'm watching it going like, why is he doing any of this? Why is he pretending to go along with this? Why is he pretending to be in love with Glinda when he's not? Mm-hmm. What, like, she sort of springs a marriage proposal on him and he just sort of like is like, okay, if that's what you want. And all I'm like, and I'm literally just going like, but why though? Like, he doesn't want it. Yeah. Why isn't, like, why not? The movie sort of plays it like, well, he's got to play along because people can't know that he's secretly in love with the Wicked Witch. And I'm like, but why? Like, who cares? Like, I don't know. Like, just go be with her. Like,
I know. Who cares? You know, it's, and it is funny too, because it's like, my perception of that, of Fierro is like, he wants to find her first to make sure that she's okay.
Right.
So like, that was his reason for doing that. But that should have been made clear to us as the audience, because it wasn't. Because it's kind of like, oh, because Glinda's like, or I mean, I'm sorry, because Elphaba's like, oh, I wasn't sure if you were still on my side. And they wanted us as the audience to not be sure about him. Yeah. But I feel like if we know that he's on her side and then it's a surprise to her, we still, because there's nothing gained by the surprise of him being on her side.
Right.
Like, it was like, oh, okay, great. Like, yeah, he's on her side. He still loves her. Like, but he already said that. So what I, it was just kind of weird.
That's the thing is it rather than him like discovering that he still has feelings for her and then like acting on them. It's like, it seems like from the beginning of the movie, he's just like, oh no, I'm just sort of I'm kind of like conning people into believing that I'm part of the team, but really I just want to find my green girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of like, I don't think you need to do any of this to do that. Yeah. Like, I don't think you need, like, and I like, again, like the movie could give us more of a reason of like, what is tying him here? Does he actually have genuine feelings about Glinda? And does he feel conflicted? Is he, you know, like, because I think that's actually the thing that puts distance between Glinda and Elphaba emotionally, is when Glinda finds out he's in love with her.
Right.
And
right.
That's when Glinda tells Madame Morrible and the wizard that they could use Nessa as emotional leverage to get to Elphaba and all this stuff. It's after he basically walks out on their wedding, but it's like, okay, cool. Like, that's something, but it seems like Fierro was never into it to begin with. And it makes me wonder, just question, like, why is he doing any of this? Why doesn't he just go? Why is he not just devote? If he's sure that he's in love with Elphaba and that's his primary concern, however many years it's been, two or three, I don't know. Why has he not just been all about finding her? And I bet, like, Oz doesn't actually seem like that big of a place. Like, I bet he could have found her.
It doesn't hold up that well when you think about it.
That's the thing is, like, in the 45-minute second act of the stage musical version of this, you don't really have time to think about any of these things. In the 2-hour and 15-minute long movie, we, like I said, we've added nothing but time. And I'm asking all of these questions and I'm like sitting there going like, you've got time now to answer these questions and they're not doing it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've got Colman Domingo in this movie playing the Cowardly Lion and he has two lines of dialogue. Yeah. And it's kind of like, hey guys, like, I don't like do something. You've got Colman Domingo.
Yeah, I know.
Have some fun. Like have some fun with like, there was one thing that they added where I was like, okay, that's something where you're trying, like it always, to me, we sort of kind of gloss over in the stage version, how the monkeys come to be Elphaba's minions because they start out as minions of the wizard. And then she does a spell from the Grimmery to make them have wings.
Yeah.
And they're mad about that initially, but then they eventually become her friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in this movie, we do a whole scene with Elphaba and the animals. And Dulcibear is like the Harriet Tubman of Oz. And she's, she's trying to like Underground Railroad animals out of Oz. And I did like the kind of like weird authoritarian building of the Yellow Brick Road where
the and yellow is
And what would you say yellow is?
Yellow it represents oppression and everything in this movie.
And so the animals are like digging under the road and they have this added song called There's No Place Like Home, which you know is obviously, we know what that's a reference to,
right?
But again, it's like the only additional thing I think we get out of this scene that we didn't have in the original is the monkeys show up to spy on Elphaba and they wind up being kind of like intrigued by her message and they like her.
I think even then she takes responsibility. Mm-hmm. They're watching her.
Yeah.
And someone says, well, like, didn't you give the monkeys wings and make the spies? And she said, yes, I did that. And I have to live with that. And that she takes accountability for it, but says it was a mistake. So the monkeys kind of see that as like, oh, okay, maybe she wasn't bad, which, yeah, I did like that. You kind of get why the monkeys ultimately do follow her.
Wait, tell me more about this yellow representing oppression in this.
Yeah, so yellow is like just so the production design. Nathan Crowley, amazing production designer, does awesome stuff all the time. He did so. I did a Wonder Funner on it, which is great. He built a ton of sets. So they planted 9 million tulips for first movie. Yeah, it's absolutely insane. And then they planted another million yellow tulips to kind of show that the Yellow Brick Road and the yellow of it all is representing the oppression of the wizard and him building the Yellow Brick Road and kind of like, so there's a lot more yellow in this movie.
And that's, I think, you know, I mean, again, to give credit where credit is due, like we already said, the production design of this film is, of course, gorgeous. It was gorgeous in the first film. There's so many practical sets that are really, really cool. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is really good to see. But like talking about like kind of nebulous character motivations, let's talk about the wizard. Let's talk about Jeff Goldblum. And just I just am like, why is this guy evil?
I don't get it either. And this is the thing, like we pretty much went through the beginning of this movie.
Right.
And then like after she has that song, which the two new songs, I didn't love them, but sometimes when you hear it, you need to hear a song multiple times.
Sure.
But it wasn't amazing. It did give more emotional depth and they sang them well. But after she sings that, she just kind of goes and shows up to the wizard. Right. Like, and we have this scene where she sees Glinda. And then they go and see the wizard and it felt so motivationless.
Well, and there's all this stuff in this movie too, where it's like, they're just adding Ariana Grande into scenes that Glinda wasn't in before because the movie's trying to be like, well, they have to be co-leads.
It feels
like you're watching Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel have a fight in a Fast and the Furious movie where it's like they have to punch each other equal times, you know, and it's just sort of like, and it feels contrived because they're like, well, we have to make sure that they get punched equal times. And it, and so it's like, you know, in the stage musical, in the song Wonderful, it's just the wizard and Elphaba, but they Glinda into the scene so that they can, they're like, let's bring Ariana into the movie more. And they, if they, since they give Elphaba a new song with No Place Like Home, they have to give Ariana a new song.
And
her new song was like, we did not need that song. Like,
no. And the only cool thing was they kept going in the mirror shots. They'd go in the mirror, which was cool. But I was just like, I
was into the song, especially at that point in the narrative. I think you're feeling the narrative momentum picking up and you're like, this song is not telling us anything we don't already know. And
Please keep going on with it.
But they add her into Wonderful. And it, again, this all just feels, so many things in this movie just feel like this is happening because we say so. And it's like Elphaba shows up to sort of confront the wizard after years. Why is she doing it right now? I don't know.
Yeah. And she doesn't come in. She just like walks in and she's not mad. She's not like come in like guns blazing. And like the wizard gives you this proposal that makes you reconsider something. But like, she just like walks in and is like, hey, you're lying. And he's like, hey, let's be friends. And she's like, okay.
Yep. She comes in and Glinda shows up and he's like, hey, but what if we all just were like, it was all cool. And she's like, you know what? That sounds awesome. And it's like,
if you let go of the monkeys, and he's like, okay.
Fair enough.
That's it. That's all.
Yeah. Like, so she gets him to free the monkeys. That's another thing that helps the monkeys be like, oh, we like her. She got us freed. Yeah. But then the twist after that scene, after she's like made up with so first of all, it's like, she has a scene with Nessa where she kind of like, you know, she tells her I'm off to see the wizard. And that's another thing that this screenplay does so much of that. I feel like there was just enough of it in the stage version. And then they just add so many more lines of dialogue that are just winks at the audience. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's just too much for me. Yeah. It's like every line of dialogue is like looking at the audience like, eh, did you hear?
I'm off to see the wizard.
Looking at the, you guys know?
Yeah.
You know? Like that whole song, like there's no place like home. It's like, you're literally just doing this to be like, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, at a certain point, I'm just kind of like, hey, somebody just sing Over the Rainbow. Whatever. Who cares? Yeah.
Might as well.
I
mean, honestly, it'd be cool if they had Dorothy, they could have honestly sang it with somebody who was pretty amazing.
Yeah, but it's weird. Elphaba's been on the run for all this time. Yeah. She's been hiding out. And for the screenplay could say, they could write a line of dialogue that's like, here's why I'm coming out of hiding now. And here's why I need to confront. Yeah. But it's just, she's like, I'm going to go see the wizard. And
well, I think, I mean, honestly, if she found out about, I don't know how you'd make this work, but if Dorothy is the one that's like, Elphaba somehow realizes that Dorothy's going to get thrown in the middle of this, and the only way to save her is to do everything that she does, right? And at the same time, she's going to expose the wizard and get him to go home out of Oz. Like, if that could have been the narrative, that would have been, I feel like that would have been a much more fun.
You're definitely writing something more interesting there, which is like, because the end of the Wizard of Oz, the original movie, is that he is sort of found out to be this fraud by Dorothy. And then he does leave. And if it could be built in somehow that Elphaba is behind the scenes puppeteering this, I don't, but again, it's like, that's kind of the problem with this show overall. I think that having more time in the second act exposes a lot of the narrative flaws of the musical overall, which is just like the pieces don't really fit together very well. And I think that the book Wicked, I don't think that it was ever intended to be like a perfect puzzle piece. That I think it was always intended to be like, a different vision of this thing. But it really feels like in this movie, they want to do like what Rogue One is to A New Hope, which is like, this should lead right up into it really nicely. And the thing about Andor and Rogue One is that they do lead really nicely into, they it's a really nice, like, oh, that's a cool, it recontextualizes what I know about A New Hope in a really nice way. It doesn't like, because all of a sudden The Wizard of Oz as a movie, if you take those events from that movie as like they happened that way, and this is all the stuff you didn't know, that movie makes no sense. Like that all of a sudden, given this context. And so you have to just kind of go like, well, maybe the movie's not correct, and it's got, because there's even things like the ruby slippers, you know, Nessa Rose in the first movie gets these slippers and they're silver, not ruby. But what I'm pretty sure happens in the stage show is she does a spell on them that makes Nessa walk, not fly, not levitate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when she walks, they turn red. And because the actress playing Nessa actually is in a wheelchair, they couldn't do that. And so they had her levitate. But it's weird. The shoes do turn red, and then they turn back to not red, which again is like, okay, but in the original movie, they are red. So
yeah.
So is this a different story? Or
I know it was. It does kind of bring up all those weird little things, you know.
Right. And
I think that's the as we said, it's a big problem with this movie. And it's like, add your own, you know, if you can add Dorothy in. And I know, like, John M. Chu is very much like, this is not Dorothy's story, and they wanted to keep it separate, which I understand, but I do think that's the wrong call. Cause if you are able to add Dorothy into it, you can make up your own story. And like in the major scenes, and then we can fill in the rest, whether or not it happened that way or whatever, but then you're starting to control this other story that doesn't really fit. Cause if we're taking the Wizard of Oz, the movie as kind of the gospel of what happened, you can change it if you include them in this movie, and you can kind of like, no, in this one, this is what happened.
Yeah. So it's back to sort of the wizard, though. So the twist at the end of Wonderful is he lets the monkeys go, and it seems like the wizard and Elphaba are actually going to get along, and maybe she just misunderstood him, and he's not so bad after all. Mm-hmm. And then she finds out that he's still keeping a bunch of animals in cages, and he comes in and he's kind of like, some animals can't be trusted. And she she says, yeah, I know that now, kind of pointing it at him. But it's like, you already knew that about him, and then you forgot it because you guys sang a song together. B, I still don't know why he's like this. Like, I don't know why. And could there be an explanation that he's like, in the world I come from, animals are like, I don't know. Like, is there a reason? Could there be some reason? And then like, but the movie never gives us that. The stage show never gives us that. Maybe it's in the book, but it's just sort of one of those things where they're like, he's just a bad guy. But then there's things about him too, like this green elixir that he always drinks. Mm-hmm. And they set this up in the first film, and in the first act, it's like, he's got this little green elixir when he hooks up with Elphaba's mom, and you know, he gives her mom some of the elixir. And what we assume is like, whatever she drank turned her daughter green, you know, because but we never get an answer as to what is this stuff.
Like
Olivia was like, couldn't it just be like booze from Earth? Like, what if it's just like gin? You know, like, what if it's, I don't know, you know, like,
I would love to know what it is. My thought was that, and I think in the book they do explain why he doesn't like animals. It's like, I want to read this book now, or at least the, you know, the Cliff's Notes on it or whatever. But, I always thought that the green elixir was like something that he had made to try and make himself magic, hoping it would make him magic. Like, and then he just got addicted to it, whatever it was, you know, it could have had something. And then that transferred into Elphaba that really did make her magic. So, I mean, and that's ultimately what they're saying is this thing, whatever it was, actually is what made her green, but But yeah. I am also thinking that that's kind of what added to her magic to make her so powerful. So
yeah, so that's another big reveal in this film. That's another big twist is the dad of the Wicked Witch of the West is the wizard. The wizard is her dad.
And they never do anything with that.
And they never do anything with it. And
even in the play, they don't really, they just kind of gloss over it, which is like weird.
And what Glinda says is, oh, that's why Elphaba was magic, because she was a child of both worlds. So the explanation is her magic comes from, if you mix a person from our world with a person from Oz, you get a green magic person. I don't understand the logic of that at all.
I didn't get that either.
And then on top of that, we have Madame Morrible, who is magic. And so it's like, well, what's going on there? Like, it does.
I know.
Is Madame Morrible a child of both worlds? And
maybe.
And I think that the green elixir thing is a better explanation than, like, why always have this little MacGuffin that the guy's pulling out and showing? Why always have this if you're never going to be like, oh, you were her father and you were drinking that. And like this stuff is, I think that's makes a lot more sense than just a guy from Earth hooked up with a woman from Oz. And that produced a magic green baby because that's what happens.
Yeah.
And it's just the movie saying this is how it works. And you go, okay. But also that like in the, That doesn't make any sense because you have another magic character and she's not green and she doesn't seem to, you know.
No.
But you could try to give us some kind of answer here where it's like Madame Morrible's powers come from the elixir. The wizard, what little power he does have comes from the elixir. Elphaba's real power comes from the fact that the elixir is like baked into her DNA. That's something that I can at least track the magical logic of.
Yeah.
And while we're on the topic of Madame Morrible, there's another character that it's just like, why is she evil?
I don't know.
Don't know.
And that's, again, like, if this green elixir is what's making her magic, that would be why she's with the wizard. Like, and she is like, he's the one who's making me magic. And he, like, that's why she's with her. That's why she is with the wizard. And that's why she's loyal to him, because he has given her all this power and all this, you know, and she is a, you know, so she's, that would make more sense.
And I think we have to say this too, just because it's something we do on the show. Everybody loves Michelle Yeoh. She's a legend. We love her. She is miscast in these movies.
Yeah.
And I think we might have said that in the first film. It's definitely like apparent in the first film. I think it's much more so apparent in the second film that it's just like,
she's just too likable.
I just don't think this is a role for her.
It's kind of like you want someone a little more devious, you know? Like,
yeah.
She's just like, I love Michelle Yeoh. And it's like, she's just kind of too nice and likable it just didn't really work that well for her, and especially in this movie.
Listen, I hope our audience doesn't cancel me for saying this. I'm just going to be quoting a TikTok that I watched today that I was like, and I commented on the TikTok. I was like, thank you for saying this. It was an Asian woman who made a video and she was like, listen, John M. Shu, Asian to Asian. I love you, dude. Awesome movie. I know why you cast Michelle Yeoh in the movie. I know that you wanted to put one of us in a lead role. Thank you for doing it. It was a mistake. and I was like, thanks for saying that. Like, I think that's fair to say that it's like John M. Shu wanted to put an Asian person in a lead role, not just Bowen Yang as like a bit part, but like,
right.
And like Michelle Yeoh, she's a legend.
She's amazing.
And she's awesome. I think I was like, I'm glad that it's not just, cause it's not like, I get it. Like, we don't want it to just be a bunch of white people.
Yes.
And, you know, and that's great, but it's not a fit for her.
They could have probably cast somebody that could have added that deviousness. Michelle Yeoh is just a little bit too, I don't know. There's something missing with her.
There's an, there's an actress that auditioned for it that I think played it on Broadway at one point who I can't remember her name, but a lot of people online are like, when they found out she auditioned, they were like, wait, what? Because she's a black woman and she played it on Broadway. And she's like, and she's also like got a pretty solid film career. I can't remember her name right now, but everyone was like, oh, her. I think
she didn't ruin the movie in any way.
Again, the movie's good enough. And everything's good enough. I think the problem with her character is the writing. It's just like the major problem is like, why is this character the way she is? What are her motivations? What are anyone's motivations? It just feels like a movie where everyone is just doing things because the screenplay says they have to. At one point, Madame Morrible, we find out, is the one who conjures the twister that brings Dorothy to Oz. This is another thing. We're talking about Dorothy here. It just is like, the movie is just sort of like, this Madame Morrible, we see her conjuring the twister, which is something we don't see in the stage play because it's, you know, and then it's just sort of like, this house is in the twister. And the question of like, how is not, so it's again, this puzzle pieces thing where it's like, have you ever wondered why the twister happened in the first place? It's like, it's because Madame Morrible created it. It's like, okay, that answers the question of where the twister came from. It doesn't answer the question of how it wound up in Kansas and picked up a girl's house in Kansas and brought it to Oz.
And why is Dorothy there? Like, why wouldn't it be better if there was a reason for her being the one that they bring to Oz?
What is special about Dorothy that mixed her? Could there be something about, I don't know. Is there a connection between the wizard and Dorothy and Elphaba? And is there some way to tie this all together in a way that actually feels like it fits, instead of just, well, Madame Morrible created the twister and the twister somehow sucked a house out of Kansas that had Dorothy in it?
And she is just, she's there. She was in the house, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, there's not much reason. And you, when you think about it, it all just kind of falls apart because, there's not really an answer.
Because now Dorothy's here and Dorothy is off to see the wizard with, and she's accruing her pals who we've met, you know, Bach as the Tin Man. But again, none of the original movie makes sense now. Is the Tin Man just like, when we find him in the Judy Garland film, he's like rusted and stuck.
Yeah.
That's not how we find him in this film. When we find, you know, the Scarecrow is like out in a field, I guess they could find Fiero out there. Why does he go with them? I it's hard to imagine Jonathan Bailey doing like, if I only had a brain, why would he be doing that?
It's hard. And that, like in this movie too, like Dorothy comes and she falls on the sister. We don't see what happens after all of that. We don't see anything going on. And then all we see is the aftermath. And Elphaba's like, that was a half-hearted, you know, because Glinda's like saying, you know, her condolences or whatever to Nessa Rose. And then Elphaba's like, oh, can I please just say goodbye to my sister? And I was like, you're not even sad. Like, wouldn't you be like heartbroken that your sister just died? Like, it was such a weird scene after that.
Well, that's the other problem that this show has always had, is like they can't seem to decide whether or not they want to commit to the idea of Elphaba actually becoming Wicked, because she like they hint at it. They say it in No Good Deed. She says,
yeah,
let all laws be agreed. You know, I'm wicked through and through. Since I cannot succeed Fiero saving you, I promise no good deed will I attempt to do again. She sings this song where she vows to never do a good deed ever again. Yeah. And that she is wicked through and through from here on out. Mm-hmm. And it feels like this should be the moment in the story where she actually becomes the Wicked Witch of the West, and she takes on the persona of the, like, I'll get you, my pretty. And maybe there's something in the Wizard's Elixir that, like, if you give in to your, it's like the Force, you know, if you give into your dark impulses, the magic in that elixir can turn you evil. Mm. And maybe that's why she doesn't really care that her sister's dead, is because she's becoming more and more wicked as the movie goes on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like Fiero and Elphaba hook up at one point in this movie. They have a love song in her
right before this.
And she says at the end of that song, it's, you know, for the first time I feel wicked. And it seems like this, both the stage musical and the movie want to be like, this is her character journey, is how she goes from being the hero to the villain. Mm-hmm. But then they, like, the twist is like, no, she never actually becomes wicked. She did. But it's like, then why does she sing a whole song about it? And I think it's a problem in both the movie and that. It's like, I think you need to commit to her actually becoming kind of bad. And it should be like a sad story about how this girl was, like, made into a villain by the society that lied about her, and they pushed her to the, you know.
Yeah, that, I think that would be a tragedy, which could be much more interesting, you know, and that they could have done that. But yeah, it is kind of, it doesn't hold up to scrutiny. And I mean, she does. 'Cause she has that interaction with Glinda after her sister died, and then Fiero saves her, and everyone they're beating him up, and she turns him to straw so that he won't get his bones broken, you know, and won't die. And that's why she does that. But then I think that's basically when she decides no good deed goes unpunished, and she gives into this whole wicked thing, which again, it doesn't work, even though the song is amazing.
Song's amazing.
And like, the emotion is there, but it just, like, she goes wicked.
I feel like the song is supposed to be like the antithesis to Defying Gravity. Defying Gravity is like her becoming the hero, her becoming the, like, discovering her power.
Yeah.
And No Good Deed is supposed to be like her fall from grace into fine. If there's no other path for me other than to be the villain, I'll be the villain. If there's no way for me to do good in this world, then I'm just gonna, you know. And that's what the lyrics literally say. Mm-hmm. And then but not really. She's like, she's still good old Elphaba, she's just kind of pretending to be wicked. It's like, okay, then what? Why does the song go so hard then? Like,
she does.
I think when it's moving faster, you don't think about it as much. And when you have a 2 hour and 15 minute long movie, you're kind of like, well, it just, like, nothing really. It just feels like a movie where, like, none of the characters' motivations are thought out very well or fleshed out, or I don't know. I mean, do you want to talk at all about her sex robe that she puts on in her treehouse?
No, we don't need to talk about that. That was so weird. Okay, here's the thing I will say about this scene.
Okay.
They have this really great, every time they sang, it was awesome. I felt the emotion. I thought the singing was great. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. This scene particularly, nothing was exciting about this scene.
No.
They're like, you know, hey, oh, we're gonna love each other, and you know, like, we're hooking up. And I was like, oh, great. Why don't you do something really, really cool where, like, things are floating and they're like, they do float for a second.
Yeah.
But I was like, the song is exciting. It's like, it has a really good beat, where dude, you could do some fun stuff.
Like, she should Superman him. She should take him into the sky.
Yeah. And, you know? And like make him levitate. And like they do cool things where they're like, you know, the ceiling, they're jumping off the ceiling. Like, do some cool stuff. This was just, they were like singing and then they float for a minute. And I was like, man, you guys could have done some really, really cool stuff. They like, you guys must have ran out of money or something. Cause it was just like them singing when I was like, you could, you know, dancing through life where they're doing all, you know, the bookcase is moving and they're all like just a fun scene, like do something like that.
That's kind of another problem with this movie is it just is a lot more droll than the first film. The first film is just like so has such a pace to it. And again, it's just a, like the first act of Wicked is more of a banger than the second act is. Rather than trying to find ways to bring the second act to life more, they just sort of lean into the fact that it is just kind of a, it's a more of a downer. And kudos to Fierro for being down with the robe. Like he is undeterred by the robe, but I just thought it was really funny that she has this like big black overcoat that she wears and she like takes it off seductively at the beginning of this number. And it's the first time we've seen like her shoulders and like, you know, and then she immediately puts on this giant robe that's like so big. It's so big and it's like so dirty. It literally looks like it's like matted down and like, and I just was kind of like, as good as the costume design is for this, for these films, this robe is crazy. You know, it's fine if they wanted to be like, no, she wants to get cozy, you know? You know, but she, like, I saw a really funny thing on TikTok where someone was like, if you need to go pee in Wicked for good, the scene where Fierro and Elphaba hook up in the treehouse is about 3 minutes long, and they do a nice job. It's a nice song, but you can tell it's a lesbian kissing a gay man. And, you know...
Man, it was weird. I thought too. She like she takes off her robe, and I'm like, oh. And then she puts something else on, and he's like into it. So I'm like, all right.
It was almost like a Naked Gun gag, where like
it was.
You take one thing off, and then you put on like a much bigger, much less flattering thing.
It was like, okay, I guess. Hey, as long as you guys like it, that's cool.
Whatever, you know, whatever. Like, whatever gets Fierro going, okay? But I also heard like some parents were like, I didn't know that was going to, like, I brought my kids. And it's like, well, you know, it's part of the, it's part of the stage show.
I took my kids. It was like, they were like, oh, it was not bad. I mean, it's PG. If you're going to do something, I guess put something else on that's bigger. So,
yeah.
It was. I didn't feel like it was bad.
Yeah. So we kind of like you go through to the end of the movie where Dorothy gets told by the wizard that she's got to kill the witch and then he'll grant the wishes and all this stuff. And again, it's like all of this happens because it has to, because this is how it happens in the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And the pieces need to fit. I just don't get, like, even the scene when Dorothy is there with I'm like, why is Fierro here? Like, what?
Yeah, I know.
I just don't get, like, what is he doing? I don't, you know, and like you said, it would be nice to see how Fierro and Elphaba planned this out or and make more sense of that. But basically we get to, you know, we go through Ariana Grande's little solo number that takes uptime, and then we get to For Good, which is a nice little farewell for these two lead women, and it's a
great job.
Yep, it's emotional,
like the emotion was there, the singing was awesome, their performances were great, felt very heartfelt. So
Dorothy throws water on Elphaba. This is also something where it's like in the stage version, they do this with shadows because they don't want to bring an actual actor playing Dorothy on. But I'm like, it's a movie, so we don't need to do the shadow thing, but whatever.
Right.
Anyway, she's dead. Good news. The witch is dead. We get to basically the beginning of the first film.
Yeah.
And then we go back to show that the twist is she actually went through a trap door, and Fierro, as the Scarecrow, goes and gets her. I've always thought this is weird writing, and Olivia and I were talking about this, that Fiero and Elphaba both do this thing to each other where, like, Fiero says to her, I think in the first movie, like, "You're beautiful." And she goes, "You don't need to lie." And then he says, "It's not lying. It's just seeing things in a different way." Yeah. And then she says the same thing to him when he's the Scarecrow. And I was like, that seems kind of rude. It's like, yeah. No. It's like, I'm not lying. Like, I'm just sort of like choosing to see you in a different way.
It's almost like, "Oh, you're beautiful. Oh, don't lie. It's just seeing things in a different way." And then she says that to him. So I'm like, so you're saying, it's like, "Hey, baby, you're ugly, but I got a thing for ugly chicks." So
yeah, exactly.
This sounds like some sort of weird fetish. Like,
it sounds like you're saying, like, if I pretend that ugly is hot, then you're hot. I think you're really beautiful. It's like, don't lie. It's like, no, if I pretend that ugly stuff is beautiful, then
I know it was like, it felt so weird because it's like, listen, if you think she's beautiful, say she's beautiful. Like, that
just say
it made it sound like, well, yeah, I mean, you're ugly, but hey, I'm into it, you know.
But everyone's hot to someone, you know. It's like, everyone's good looking to somebody.
Yeah.
So if you think about it like that, we're all hot. It's like you're not fixing the thing here.
This isn't working. I'm not getting it.
Yeah. When I say don't lie, just say, "I'm not lying. I think you're beautiful."
Yeah.
That's it.
Like, "I'm not lying. Yep, you're beautiful."
I'm not, you know, it's the Shrek ending, you know. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I thought I was supposed to be beautiful. Fiona, you are beautiful.
Yes.
That's
what you need.
You know?
Because it was weird. It is kind of like, well, you're ugly, but that's okay. We have each other.
Don't lie. I'm not lying. I'm just choosing to believe that I don't find you hideous.
Exactly.
Yeah. And anyway, Fiero and Elphaba wander off into like the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Like the desert beyond Oz. And again, I'm like, I don't know where they're going or where they're going to wind up. And they say, Glinda can't know. Don't know why she can't know. And she has to believe that they're dead. I don't know why. Yeah. And then the movie is over. And that's it.
That was the we did. Glinda like makes the wizard leave,
right?
Which is also just kind of, he's just kind of like, "Oh, okay, I'll leave." Like, it was just kind of like, "Okay, cool."
Why would he?
And they get Madame Marble and they like take her away. I thought they were gonna drop her. They were gonna straight up murder her, but
yeah,
they take her to a cell, which is also kind of like, "Oh, all right, cool," but.
I guess she can't do magic in the cell.
That's what I thought too. Like, why aren't you using your magic here? It was weird.
I don't get how this movie doesn't feel the need to resolve the fact that like Madame Marble is magic. Like, what?
Yeah.
I just am like, we gotta. That's a problem for this universe.
She can control the weather. Why couldn't she do that then? Like,
it's a problem that you're just putting like a magic, the only magic sorcerer left in Oz, in a cell. And nobody has the power to stop her from we need to explain where her powers come from.
Yeah.
But whatever. Again, this movie is just full of people just doing things because the movie says they do them. Yeah. It's like, and now Madame Marble goes to prison and she stays there because she does. And when Glinda says to the wizard that he should leave, he just agrees and says, "Sure thing."
Don't know why, but okay.
And again, it's like, I think there's just a way that you could make the puzzle pieces. It feels like the first act of Wicked and the first movie, it sets up all of these interesting questions and interesting possibilities. And you're so excited to be like, oh, how are they going to, like, the first half of the arcs are really engaging and really interesting.
Yeah.
And the way that they all get, it's just kind of like, the movie's like, now this person's that person, now this person's that person, now this person's that person, and they all act differently than they did in the first movie because. And it's like, okay. And then, and the end of The Wizard of Oz. And it's like, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. You know?
Yeah.
Good enough, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Good enough.
Yeah, let's get into scores. Okay, we score movies out of 10. We give a 10 is the best, and we give a technical rating. We give a rating for the ending, a rating for rewatchability, a rating for cultural significance and impact, and a rating for subjective score. So, Kramer, what's your technical rating for Wicked, for Good?
My technical rating is a 7, and I'm giving this because the production design is so amazing. The singing and the acting for what they have to do is also amazing. Like, everything was done really, really well. But so I feel like it's like that's done so well that I feel, I mean, I maybe could give it a 6.5 because it is really slow and it just doesn't feel like it warrants an entire 2-hour and 15-minute movie. So I'm being generous, though, for all the technical things that they did right. The actors, their acting, their singing, the production design, the cinematography, the everything is just done really, really well in everywhere except for the story, which is unfortunate.
I'm at a 7 as well for the exact same reasons. It's hard not to give this film a higher technical rating because every department is really doing their job except for the screenplay. And the screenplay, I would actually say the screenplay for this movie is like kind of bad. And it's bad enough that it docks 3 whole points off of the craft aspect. And like you said too, like the movie drags. And so that's on the director and the editor to like to cut a film together that feels like it's got more energy behind it. So I could probably even drop it down a little bit more too, but I want to give this film a high technical score for the strength of the performances, the strength of the production design, you know, the strength of the costumes, all of that stuff. But yeah, so I'm at a 7. How about the ending?
The ending I'm giving a 5.5. It's not, I mean, they stayed true to it. It, you know, everything kind of works out, but I'm also, I don't know. I mean, there wasn't anything that was so great about it, you know? It doesn't end with a great big number, musical number, but I mean, I'm satisfied with their relationship, Elphaba and Glinda. That really paid off really, really, really well. And I loved that ending of their story, but the ending for the actual movie was just fine.
Yeah, I gave it a 6. I mean, it's just the end of the first one hits so hard and this one just, it just sort of is like, okay, like I said, it's like, it's this weird thing where it's just like, you know, if I just agree to not think too hard about it, it is good enough in many aspects. And I think that fans of this film are going to really enjoy it. Fans of like, of the musical, people who their favorite film last year was Wicked are going to love this. The more that I talk about this movie with people, the more I'm just like, it's got a lot of problems. And the ending is just, it like everything that happens just feels so unearned. And it just feels like the movie is just telling me that's what happened. And I'm like, okay, if you say so. So a 6. Yep. How about rewatchability?
Rewatchability, I gave a 5. It's, you know, it's too long. And I could skip through and watch the musical aspects of it. I think that was fun, but everything else, it was just kind of like, man, this is just like dragging. But I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff that you could see out of it. So I kind of stuck it there in the middle.
I gave it a 5 as well. Somebody said the other day that they would love to see a cut of this film where it's both together. That's like a, maybe like a three hours and 15 minutes, 3 hours and change cut of the film where you cut a little bit out of the first one, cut a lot out of the second one and see what happens if you just put them all together as one thing. Cause I would like to continue watching the first one and I could see myself really getting to the end of the first one and being like, I don't really care to watch the second one again.
that's how I feel too. Like, I would love to watch the first one is like way up there on the chart, you know, and I don't really want to watch this one again.
How about cultural impact and significance?
Cultural impact, I gave a 6, and maybe it needs to be higher, but I feel like this is kind of the general consensus. Maybe it's not. I mean, a lot of people are going to love this movie, and that's great if you love it. But a lot of people that I've seen is just kind of like, oh, okay, it was, you know, it wasn't what I wanted it to be, or it didn't live up to the expectations. So, but we'll see. I mean, this was it's making a ton of money,
right?
And I also just don't know if it's anywhere near the cultural impact that the first one had.
I gave it an 8 just because of the bigness of
That's probably more appropriate. Yeah.
Whether, you know, like my personal feelings and people's reception of it aside, I think the bigness that like the kind of shadow that these two films have cast over pop culture for the last 2 years is really big. And I think it will continue to have, I mean, there's so much around these films too, like the weird relationship between Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande on the press tour and everything. There's so much, Ariana Grande dating Ethan Slater and him living his wife during the production to like all the, like there's so much.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that this musical has been very big in the 21st century in pop culture, and the movie adaptation was about as successful as you could hope for.
Yeah, I think you're right. I need to change mine to a 7 at the very least, but you're probably more accurate. Yeah.
How's your subjective score?
My subjective score is a 6. It was really disappointing in all those ways that we talked about, but the singing and all the technical aspects of it were really fun to look at and fun to listen to when they happen. They just happen way too far apart, you know, and it just takes too long.
Yeah, mine was a 6.5. And, you know, it's just like good enough, enough stuff to enjoy, moments that definitely like got me. But I just, it's frustrating to add this much time to the second act and really add nothing that helps. Those are our thoughts. Let us know what you guys thought. Did you love this movie? Do you hate do you completely disagree with us, or do you agree with our assessment for the most part? Comment down below. Next up, we are going to be watching the movie Eternity from A24. This one looks really, really interesting. Miles Teller and
Elizabeth Olsen.
Elizabeth Olsen. And who's the other guy?
Oh man, I always forget. Callum.
Whatever.
Turner. Callum Turner. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this one looks interesting. So that's what we're watching next. Go see it in theaters if you want to watch along with the show. Like, share, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.